CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're looking to a launch from the planet Earth by a private enterprise. Bob Zimmerman is here, keeping the website Behind the Black, following commercial successes. Bob, what is the Vulcan rocket? Why is this significant?
Good evening, John. The Vulcan rocket is the United Launch Alliance's ULA's upgrade rocket that's going to replace the Delta rocket family. It's been launching for years, and the Atlas V rocket has been launching for years. Both those rockets are very expensive, and they're not very competitive with SpaceX. And so a few years ago, ULA announced it was going to make a new rocket called the Vulcan rocket, designed to be more efficient and cost less. And along the way, they're going to evolve that rocket to recover its engines so that they can, the first stage engines, so they can reuse them to reduce their cost and once again be competitive, more competitive with SpaceX. The Vulcan rocket is now 3 years delayed, and the reason it's delayed is actually not United ULA's fault. The fault lies with Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos's company, which is making the two BE-4 engines that the first stage of the Vulcan rocket will use. And those engines are 3+ years behind schedule. Now, they finally delivered two flight-worthy engines to ULA about 3 months ago, 4 months ago. And ULA had done everything else it had to do prior to getting the engines, very quickly installed those engines in the Vulcan rocket. And its first and second stages have now been are now shipped and have arrived at Cape Canaveral for the preparation of that first inaugural launch before the end of March. That's their plan. And there's a lot riding on that launch. I can go down the list. First of all, the rocket itself is going to be carrying the first lunar lander of a private company. It's going to be the Peregrine lunar lander from Astrobiotic. This is a private company that wants to become a provide lunar and planetary capabilities for others. And that's going to be its first launch. It's also going to carry two prototype satellites for Amazon's Kuiper constellation that is supposed to compete directly with SpaceX. Both will start at the same time. SpaceX has got 3,000-plus satellites in orbit. This will be the first two prototype satellites that Amazon will launch. They're much slower. So that's riding. But then more important for ULA, ULA needs to fly twice, the Vulcan rocket twice, to get certified by the military to fly military flights. And this would be the first certification. And they've got seven military flights already contracted for, but they can't fly any of them and make any money on them until they get those two certified flights gone. So once they're on this flight, they're going to try to get a secondary flight up as quickly as possible in 23, so that before the end of 23, they can launch the first military launch and start the process of making money from Vulcan. So that's what rides on this launch, and it is the first launch of a rocket, and of course that always carries risks, and it also carries the risks of delays. Even if nothing goes wrong, first launch, you know, things have to, kinks have to be worked out, and even though they've done a lot of test rehearsals already with prototypes or with engineering models, the actual process could cause delays. So a lot rides on Vulcan, on ULA and Vulcan.
You're keen, Bob, on launching from the UK, the disappointment with Virgin Orbital recently. So what is the prospect of launching from the UK?
Oh, well, the companies, the various spaceports in the UK all are competing to be the first one now to get that first launch off from the United Kingdom. There are three spaceports essentially in the UK. One is called Spaceport Sutherland, that's in Scotland at Sutherland. Another one is called Saxaford, and that's in the Shetland Islands in Scotland. And the third is the airport in Cornwall, which Virgin Orbit tried to launch from with its 747, and the upper stage failed, and they didn't get the launch off. So both Saxaford and Spaceport Sutherland are now competing for the honors of the first orbital launch from the UK. Well, the director of operations at Saxaford in Shetland, he says that they hope to do their first orbital launch before the end of the year. And he's outlining how this one German company, which is a rocket startup called Rocket Factory Augsburg, is going to be testing its engines in the summer and with the hope for its first launch later this year. And as I just pointed out with ULA, first launches are notorious for delays. Even if they succeed, getting them off the ground on time is very difficult. People are working out the kinks learning how to do this. So whether they can do this by the end of the year is hard to say. I think this guy's just trying to create some buzz for Saxaford. There's also a spaceport in Sweden that is going to possibly try to do a launch this year. So the competition for a first European spaceport launch is high, and I think competition is the good thing, John. It's not so much the UK, but just having all these different spaceports competing just increases the competition and therefore increases potential for good things happening.
A surprise headline in your Behind the Black: investment in space dropped 58% in 2022. What's behind this, Bob? Because monetizing solar system is the future.
According to Space Capital, a New York venture capital company of its own that has invested in some of these space companies, overall investment in space dropped 58% in 22, dropping from a high of $47.4 billion in 21 to only $20 billion in 22. So $20 billion was invested in 22. Now, why has the – and I would tell you also that if you take SpaceX out of the mix, which raised $2 billion last year itself – the numbers are much smaller for the rest of the industry. They're not zero, though. Why the drop? The drop has to do with a few publicly traded space companies that went publicly traded in the last few years. All pretty much done poorly. These include Virgin Galactic, Astra, Virgin Orbit, Momentus. These companies that went public, the stocks generally did not do well because the companies have not done that well. And of course, I think what that does is that puts some doubt into the investment community, and so they back off. They want to be more careful. Except they give plenty of money to SpaceX because that company hasn't had problems. It also is part of the ebb and flow with the industry right now. A lot of companies got their investment dollars, and now they're in the process of spending that money to try to get off the ground. And so waiting for something to happen is really what's going on now. No one's going to give them more money until they actually start to do things. And so that's what we're waiting for, John.
We go to the ISS. There's an anomaly on ISS. It's a wonderful word. It's from the 1960s, anomaly. It means that something is wrong. Okay, Bob. It's on the lifeboat by the Soyuz. Please explain what the problem is and how they're going to fix it.
Yeah, the other word they've come up with to make a big problem sound minor is glitch. Anomaly glitch. It's nothing. It's just a glitch. Well, this glitch was there's a leak in the thermal control systems, the radiator essentially, for the Soyuz lifeboat that's on board ISS. There are two lifeboats right now. One is Endurance, SpaceX's Dragon capsule, and the other one is the Soyuz. Well, there's six people on board, and three of them have to go back on a leaking Soyuz, and there's questions whether that's safe. So the Russians and the NASA made a decision, since the thermal system is at risk, not the actual oxygen in the capsule, it means that controlling the temperature upon return might be difficult. And so what the Russians and the NASA decided to do is, if an emergency should happen in the next month until a new Soyuz arrives, the two Russians that came on that Soyuz would go back on the Soyuz, but they wouldn't put a third person in. The third person, an American, Frank Rubio, he's going to return on the Endurance capsule. They'll put four people in that, which it came up with three. It can carry four. And what they've done is they've taken this seat liner from the Soyuz that was custom made for Rubio, and they've moved it and installed it in Endurance. Now, I don't know how they installed it. Was there any improvisation involved? Were there actual attachment points already put in? They don't tell us. So I don't know how this was done. I would love to have more details. But either way, for the next few weeks, if a catastrophic emergency happens and they have to evacuate ISS, two Russians will come home on a leaking Soyuz, four Americans would come home, I'm sorry, not four Americans, but four astronauts would come home on Endurance, and ISS would be left empty. The Soyuz, when it arrives in February, they'll move Rubio's liner as well as the Russian liners into that, and that's leaking Soyuz will come back empty.
Bob, the thermal leak in the thermal unit, does that mean that the cabin will or could overheat during a reentry? And does that mean that they'll be in their spacesuits to protect them?
Well, they'll be in the spacesuits anyway. That's always in case. You're always in a flight suit in a capsule in both situations, just in case. It's hard to say. They really haven't been very forthcoming with information. The leak is in the service, is on the exterior of the service module of the Soyuz capsule. Well, that service module is discarded before the capsule comes back. So I don't know how that thermal system could control the temperature within the Soyuz craft. I don't understand this, but that's what they say, that you know, when they're coming back to Earth, they go through the atmosphere, the plasma builds up around the craft, the outside of the craft gets very, very hot. And so if there's any thermal questions, the interior will get warmer. But I don't see how this thermal system could matter because it was on the outside of the surface module. So I just don't – there's not clarity here. Either way, that's the story, and that's what we know. And hopefully nothing will go wrong, and in February a new Soyuz will be there.
All right, two quick stories, one political perhaps. The other, a wonderful piece of archaeology from the 20th century space race. First, the political one. The ESA has made a decision about the Chinese space station. I didn't even know it was up for consideration. What's happened?
Yeah, there was actually a few stories over the last year or so about how Europe was having discussions with China about possibly sending astronauts to their Tiangong station. Well, the head of ESA was asked at a conference recently, what's about the possibility of sending European astronauts to Tiangong? And his answer was very blunt, no. They have neither the budget nor the political. There's both budgetary and political reasons why they're not going to do that. And the two, budget and politics, probably come together because doing a flight to Tiangong would probably upset the Americans, who you're not allowed to work with the Chinese, and they want to work with the Artemis program down the road and with American private stations, and they might be blocked from doing that, and there's money to be made there. And so so there's politics. They don't want to get the U.S. upset, and there's money because there's money to be obtained from the U.S. By not upsetting us, and so they're not going to do anything with China.
And the recovery of a rocket stage from the 1960s. Is this a time machine? What does it mean, Bob?
All right. When they launched the Gemini 5 mission back in 1965 with two astronauts on board, the Titan rocket first stage fell in the ocean, as they always do, and it's expendable, and it was assumed lost, but it wasn't lost. I don't remember this from the time, but I'm sure it was in the news. When it plunged back to Earth, hitting the Atlantic Ocean near Bermuda, an Air Force plane spotted it, and a Navy destroyer came by and picked it out of the ocean. And it's been sitting in storage for the last half century. Well, they've now restored it, and they've now shipped it to Cape Kennedy, Cape Canaveral, and it's going to be on display at the Cape Canaveral Space Force Museum there. And this is really unusual because no Titan rocket stages were ever recovered except for this. And this is the only recovery of any first stage during the whole 60s program, in the 60s into the 70s into the 80s, in fact, until the shuttle launch. Nothing had been recovered, really, from the rockets that got launched. And so this is kind of a cool piece of stuff, and it's going to now be on display, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring next to the surface of Mars. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.